I guess this is possibly my only opportunity to ask judges to take their seats. because it is an honor for me and a pleasure to introduce our next speaker, possibly known to many of you, but a person who is no stranger to public service. Throughout his career, he's been consistently serving the community. Since he was appointed to the bench in 2004, he's continued this dedication to the community, and he has presided in the Chittenden and Washington Adult Drug Courts, the Chittenden Family Treatment Court, and the Chittenden Mental Health Court. He has been a member of the Judicial Ethics Committee, president of the Vermont Trial Judge Association, possibly no easy task, and he's a member of the Board of New England Association of Drug Court Professionals, and his dedication was recently recognized by the Vermont Bar Association when they awarded him the Judge Katz Award for his excellent work in treatment courts. So please welcome Chief Justice Grierson. Where are you? I know he's here somewhere. Did I miss something?
I think
I said judge. I hope I didn't say justice, but you know, I'm kind of used to this saying.
I asked justice. Somebody and they said justice.
Nah, well, okay.
Thank you
for the
day.
Did the chief leave already? No, he should have stayed around. Good afternoon, everybody. You know, it's great to look out and see not only the number of people here, but it struck me as I looked around the room this morning, we really have representatives from every facet of the judicial system. And by that, the chief was here. I'll make sure he gets my remarks later on. But there's also another justice here, which is important. We have the attorney general here. We have representatives from, I've seen a lot of the prosecutors, the defense bar, a lot of clerks from the courts that are involved in treatment courts. We've got a representative from the domestic violence court down in Brattleboro. We've got old friends like Karen, who never misses a chance to talk about treatment courts, and that's good. We have Diane Derby here from Senator Leahy's office, so we can tap into those federal resources when we need them. And boy, do we ever need them, Diane. So I'm glad you've got a good seat, and I hope you're comfortable. I hope you enjoyed your lunch, and if you need anything, I'm sure Attorney General Sorrell will be glad to help out. The topic today, obviously, is treatment courts. It says DUI and drug courts, but when I talk about treatment courts, I talk about all of our treatment courts. And you'll notice, I guess I can say this without fear of contradiction, I didn't call them prevention courts. I agree with Bob's comments that more funds, more money has to go into prevention. But by the time they arrive at our doorstep in the court system, prevention has to take a back seat, to treatment. And so two things I'd like you to take away from my comments. Number one, treatment. We can't be successful in any of these treatment courts, be they alcohol, the DUI court, the drug court, the mental health court, domestic violence, unless we have the ability to offer treatment to these folks. The other group, quite frankly, that I didn't mean to leave out and wanted to comment, we have some legislators here. The decisions that will come out of this meeting aren't made by me or any of the other speakers that have come before me or after me. The decisions about what we do with the information you get today will come from folks in this room, the people who have the ability and influence to take the ideas and information you're getting today and make something of it. And that's why I didn't want to leave out the legislators, because they play obviously a significant part in that. So what I'd like to do in the time allotted to me is briefly tell you where we are in treatment courts, why we're here, and hopefully plant some seeds, some ideas of what we can do with what we already have. Bob referred to Albert Einstein this morning, and it occurred to me that the reason we have treatment courts, and they've been in existence nationwide for more than 25 years, because they are a response to the what has been referred to as the mindless incarceration, release, and incarceration or reoffending of individuals. And it reminded me of Albert Einstein's comment about insanity, doing the same thing over and over again, getting the same result, but somehow thinking that you'd get a different result. We know that that process failed, and it is still failing. And the treatment courts arose out of the failure of that system. Vermont has had treatment courts for going on 10 years now, and they started with adult drug courts that are still in existence. The drug courts are currently going in Chittenden County, where Judge Crescetti is sitting. The Rutland Court has been in existence for 10 years or more. Judge McCaffrey is presiding over that court. I believe, if my information is correct, that Judge Nancy Corsones, who was here, was instrumental in starting that court. Judge Corsones is now sitting in White River, babysitting Bobby Sands' favorite project, the DUI court, and keeping that going. Judge Carroll is now sitting down in Brattleboro. She sits on a domestic violence court. We have a mental health court in Chittenden, really started by Bob, and Jim Crescetti is active up there. We used to have a family treatment court in Burlington that was stopped about 5 or 6 years ago. I'll talk more about that in a minute. We also have a adult drug court in Barrie that's presided over by me for the time being. I almost forgot about that one. Those are the courts we have. Really, the names of those courts define the issues and the problems that we try to address through those courts. And oftentimes, treatment courts are referred to as problem-solving courts, and that's what they are. They're an attempt to address the issues that have brought these folks to the courthouse, because we really don't have any other option as to what does work. And so the treatment courts are really an experiment, and they have proven successful nationwide. Some of the courts that we have are still in their infancy, and we don't have the results yet. But that doesn't mean we don't stop trying to make them work and continually to look at them to see how we can improve upon them. So, you know, you've heard Mr. Walton speak, and boy, that's a tough act to follow. Trust me. I'm glad we had lunch, so at least there was a break and you could calm down before I came on. But he had, you know, the information he provided is what we see in the treatment courts day in and day out, the struggles and the success. And, you know, the idea of reducing offending, which everyone wants to do, and reducing the recidivism rate is obviously a worthy goal and an objective of all the treatment courts, and it's something that can be measured. As long as we're following best standards that Bob referred to that he didn't like, best evidence, you know, we can measure that. But really the other benefits, the intangibles that we get from these treatment courts are not as easily measured. And Mr. Walton touched on some of those, and that is returning or restoring someone to the community. Sometimes returning an infant to a parent rather than removing that child. Returning them to employment so that not only do they contribute to themselves but to their family, but to the victims. I know someone raised a question about victims in these treatment courts. That's part of the rehabilitative process. And really, when you think about it, these courts, whatever label you want to give them, are really transformation courts. They transform the participants in the ways that I've just described. but they also transform the individuals who work in those courts. And by that, I mean the judges, the prosecutors, the defense attorneys. And that's why when I look out here and see the number of judges, prosecutors, attorneys, the clinicians that are here, there's law enforcement here, this is what's important about today, that there are folks involved in many different levels, many different aspects of these treatment courts, whether they're mental health, whether they're DUI courts, or whether they're drug courts. But collectively, collaboratively, we can make a difference. And now is a time when it's more important than ever, for the obvious reason of the impact of this opiate epidemic. And it is impacting not only on our juvenile court, where we see it day in and day out, but it spills over into the other dockets, the criminal docket and the family docket. And so when I say that the experience of judges in treatment courts is transforming, I don't mean they become social workers, although we're accused of that, or cheerleaders. But what they do, what we do, my experience has been, and I think if you talked with Judge Corsones or Judge Carroll, Judge McCaffrey, and talk with the prosecutors, talk with the defense attorneys that are here. Jim Hughes was here earlier. I think I left out that court. It's an adolescent, didn't mean to leave you out, Jim. It's an adolescent drug court in Franklin County that has been going on for some time up there with support from Jim. But talk with these folks, and they will explain the differences they see with the individuals coming before them. But the skills that judges and attorneys and the knowledge that they acquire in these courts spill over into the other dockets. And by that, I mean the one of the criticisms of treatment courts is that they're heavily resourced, meaning time for judges and attorneys. The reality is most of these courts, the judges and attorneys appear for a half day every other week. And that is a lot of resources, and I would not say that otherwise, but the resources, the skill and knowledge that they pick up in that time is translated into the other courts, where in a family court docket, for instance, where we have way more than 50% of the individuals coming in without representation, we still have to talk with them and understand the problems that they bring to the court. And those problems are no different in the family court than they are in treatment court or juvenile court. It's just we don't have the resources in those courts to deal with those issues. So it's that knowledge, that skill that you pick up in treatment courts that you can carry over. So I think the resources really are benefit all of the other dockets. And it's a way of looking at those courts differently than being resource heavy. They are, but we think it's worth that investment. And the reality is that we now have a challenge before us with this opiate epidemic that we have to do something. We have to come up with some new solutions to this because the old ways have not worked. And the treatment courts give us at least a glimmer of hope that change can be made. And that's why I'm a strong believer in them. That's why I think that I've seen the results of them. The other criticism that we hear is that despite the best efforts of treatment courts of any kind, that the opportunity or the experience is that people reoffend, that they relapse. And that is not to say that everyone succeeds in treatment court, even those that graduate, that they do have failures, that they do reoffend, that they do relapse. But really that's more symptomatic of the disease that we're dealing with than the failure of the court to address that problem. And the solutions, the alternatives are pretty limited. we can go back to a system without treatment courts, that endless cycle that didn't work, or we can take what we have learned from these treatment courts. And it isn't just, we don't expect to have a treatment court in every county. That's, I guess, the third criticism. But what we have with each of the courts that I've described is a base of knowledge, and the principles that apply to a treatment court can be applied in any court, and that is early intervention and monitoring of some fashion. And that's been proven. If Ben Joseph is here, a retired judge, started a program in Burlington, the Rapid Referral Program, in 2008, and that was simply early intervention and monitoring. It was not a treatment court. T.J. Donovan started the RIC program that Bobby Sand referred to. Again, it's early intervention and it's monitoring. So it doesn't necessarily require the expenditure of resources to establish a drug court, family courts. But what it takes is to understand the issues that these folks bring to the courts. We have to deal with them. We didn't invite them here. They came. And we have to learn how to address those issues. Because, as I said, the alternatives are not good. They failed. I guess I would leave you with you telling her to give me the sign, Bobby. That's okay. I'm about to wrap up, and I can't read that far away, so I don't know what the sign says. Oh, an X? Okay. So I'll really leave you with this note then. When I say that the treatment courts offer an alternative, we can expand on the knowledge we've acquired through these various treatment courts. The other alternative, as I said, hasn't succeeded. And I thought until just recently that I had explored all of the options available to us. But I will tell you that I read in a newspaper just a week ago that another New England governor, not ours, came up with a different approach that I had not thought of. And that is, he advised his legislators, if they did not pass a bill, to come up with the resources to hire more law enforcement, that he was going to deploy the National Guard. Now, the article didn't say what he was going to do with the National Guard. And I told you the other thing I want you to remember about today is disease and treatment. I have a strong feeling that he is not going to deploy the National Guard to start observing urine screens as part of an enhanced treatment program. He's got to have something else in mind. I will really close now, Bobby, by inviting each and every one of you, and I have to paraphrase something that Judge Crawford said a number of years ago when he was getting an award for his work in mental health court. I invite all of you, before you make any decisions about what to do with the information you acquired today, to visit the treatment courts. You can come to Barry every other Monday in the morning. You can go to Rutland every Tuesday afternoon. Is that right, Judge McCaffrey? Every Tuesday? Every Tuesday afternoon. You can go to Chittenden every Thursday afternoon. I think the DUI court meets every other Friday. And go for the experience and understand why we think they're important and why they have a place in the system. I'm getting a double X, so I'm going to leave. But I will tell you this. There is a future. Talk with Sarah Reed. She's trying to talk up a family treatment court in Chittenden. I know Judge McCaffrey and his folks' treatment team are talking about that. Judge Crawford, who is with us today, has started for the first time a drug treatment court in the federal court. So there's a lot of things that we can do, folks, and I have to go. Thank you very much.